Now, eventually, you did get a deal with Sony.
Yeah. But I got that deal after I had left LA.
Okay.
I almost signed to Sony in 1998 because I was signed to a big publisher. So I was signed as a songwriter to a company called Rondor Music, which was the A&M publishing guys. They started a second company. And it was, at the time, the third largest publisher in the world. So that was a big deal to have that. And everyone just assumed that because I had signed on as a songwriter to a company that it would just follow that I would get a record deal. So I almost signed with Sony then, and then they went out of business. The subsidiary, it was called The Work Group. They went out of business, and that was gone. So then I left LA, and I lived in Chicago for 2 years, and I just wrote. I didn't perform or anything. I took a big hiatus because LA had kind of zapped my will a little bit. So that was kind of a dark period for me. But I did a lot of writing then, and it's still some of my favorite stuff I've ever written. I think it was good to have that kind of dark night of the soul moment. In life. And then I moved to New York, and that was where I got signed to Sony.
And so that was the early
2000s. Yes, 2002.
Now, did you release something with Sony?
Yes.
Okay, you did. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, that came out in 2004.
Okay.
It takes so long for that machinery to roll.
Right.
Took like almost 2 years to get the record out from the time I signed with them.
Okay, and then how long were you with Sony?
I was with them for 2.5 years.
Okay. So you've really kind of seen both sides of things from the standpoint of, you know, being in an independent label to being with Sony, and now you're producing things on your own.
Yes.
So what do you feel are some of the pros and cons from the standpoint of a musician from, you know, being with a major label or an independent label or just doing things yourself?
Well, of course, one of the pros of being on a major label is that you have that big machine. You know, it's a big company. Being on Sony, I mean, that's a big deal, and they have, you know, the capacity to promote your work all over the world, and they have the money for that, and they have people to do those things. But it doesn't always work. You know, people were on vacation quite a bit, and it was hard to get things done, and a lot of cooks in the kitchen kind of thing. And I found that a lot of it is political, and a lot of it is ego. People want to find something wrong with it so that they feel like they did, even sometimes if there is nothing wrong. So you learn really quickly the art of manipulation, and it's a survival instinct. I don't like to be manipulative. I like to be very honest, but that wasn't serving me well in that capacity. So sometimes I would have to pretend that I wanted one thing, knowing that they just wanted to disagree with me.
Okay.
So it was like reverse psychology and things like that. Like if I said, well, I don't want to do that, even though I secretly did want to do it, they would say, well, you have to do that because we said so. And then I would get what I wanted.
Sure.
So that kind of stuff, the game playing was difficult for me, and the politics, and just any time we turned anything in, it was 20 people wanting to talk about it. It's too long, it's too short, it's too fast, it's too slow. But more than that, most of the focus was on what I looked like, what I wore, what I said. I mean, this is 2004 at the time, 2003. So things were really starting to take that turn into...
At the end of the day, it seems like music should be what speaks for itself.
And it isn't.
Yeah, I know.
The priority.
But it's unfortunate that that's the case.
So that is the advantage to being on my own. Yes, I don't have millions of dollars in marketing budgets and things like that, or hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. But as far as the work goes, it's all up to me.
Sure.
So to me, my music is a lot more authentic now because it's exactly what I want it to be. It's not a million people weighing in and making changes. I get to do anything I want. I get to decide what the album is called and what order the songs go in.
Right.
And that's just not how it works on a major label. They rejected my album title. They moved all the songs around. And to me, that felt kind of weird and violating almost. But you have to, you know, I knew that was what I was doing and getting myself into when I signed to them. So I had to pick my battles very carefully.
And maybe at some level that's part of what they're paying for.
Kind of.
Have that control, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, that's part, they sign you on and then they say, well, you need to do what we say. We're the big label and you're just a little artist. And they do play that game. They say, you know, we can go out on the street right now and find 10 of you. And I don't think that's true. But that's how they will talk to you, and they're very... forthcoming. And you have to develop a thick skin in that environment. Because they say things right to your face that you just can't believe that anyone would say. They become kind of jaded to the whole thing. So I remember at one point we had a 6-week argument about whether or not I had to wear glasses all the time. Because they wanted me to always wear glasses, but being a piano player and a musician, I don't like to perform with glasses on because they slip down my face the whole show and I have
Fair
to keep
enough.
lifting my hand from the piano to fix it.
Okay.
So I didn't want to wear glasses all the time. I said, I'll wear them in interviews sometimes, but I want to wear contacts on stage. I mean, it's the stupidest thing to fight about. But 6 weeks, we argued about it. We went back and forth. And finally, the head of marketing just said, you need to understand that we need you to wear glasses because you're not cute enough to sell records.
Oh,
but if you wear glasses, then you seem intellectual, and then people will like that.
Huh.
And they just say that to you like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it's just part of their day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because you're a product to them.
Right.
So you learn to kind of develop a thick skin, and then you go home and go, I can't believe they said that to me today.
Now, I mean, as a musician, you know, you're wearing the hat of course, being a musician.
Mm-hmm.
But what advice do you have for those who want to successfully market themselves independently?
Independently,
wear
well,
that hat, the business hat, the marketing hat.
Yeah, you have to learn to do as much as you can. That's a big key, I think. You need to draw from people around you that know how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
People who know how to do graphic design. I know now how to use Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone needs a quick design of like a postcard or a flyer and they need it by tomorrow, I just do it.
Sure.
Because I spent the time to learn how to use that software. You need to learn web design. You need to learn as much as you can about every little piece of the puzzle, because you can do it on your own when money is tight.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do have more money to budget things out, then you can delegate authority well because you know what you're asking for.
Right.
You need to speak the language, you know, to be
right.
The boss.
And you know the value of things.
Yeah. And
sure.
You know how to tell someone, like, make that more this and less the other thing without
right.
being nebulous. Like, it's, I don't know what's wrong with it. I can't describe it. Nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
So, and you just have to be creative, and you have to think outside the box, and you have to try everything, and you have to be objective about what's working and what isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And in this modern age we're in now, you have to use social networking,
mm-hmm.
and you can't just be like, look at me, look at me, look at me. You have to interact with people.
You have to engage, and you
yeah.
have to make them part of what's going on.
Yeah.
Make it more about them than about you.
Yes.
Imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it's about you when it's about you, but also you do need – people want to talk about themselves.
Sure.
And you need to let them do that. And it's
sure.
– if you think about it, at least the way I try to wrap my brain around that kind of stuff, I never feel like this huge obligation.
Mm-hmm.
I think of it as kind of an honor that people would be interested in me enough
that
they want to tell me about themselves because
mm-hmm.
of what they heard in my work.
Right. Well, and for them to share how it connects to them,
yeah.
I imagine, is a fantastic feeling for you to hear.
It's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And that's the main reason I still get up and do it. Well, I would always do it, but it's the reason that I put it out there and release it.
Mm-hmm. Now, so far in 2012, you've released, I believe, 3 projects, Potential Space, the music from the play, Wait by the Water of the EP, and Calling of the Crows.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a bit in a short time. Do you find yourself kind of in an ultra-creative period, and what's fueling that for you?
Well, I'm actually not feeling like I'm in an ultra-creative period, but I am very prolific. I put out a lot of records.
Mm-hmm.
I have now, since 1995, 18 main albums, and then on top of that, there are countless like B-side collections and EPs and things like that. So I've in my career recorded over 800 songs now.
Wow!
And it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But as I get older, I find that I will sometimes go like 6 months or so, and I won't write or record anything, and then I will just in like 2 or 3 weeks. Just start banging out stuff.
Okay.
Once I get going, I tend to not stop.
Okay.
So I have to schedule it in more now than I used to.
So sometimes when it's there, and when it's not there, it's not there.
Yeah, or I'm just busy.
Okay.
I guess you could call it a con of being independent, and like independent in the way you do it mm-hmm. yourself, independent, is that because you're doing everything,
mm-hmm.
you're doing all those jobs.
You get caught in those other
things. I don't have 8 hours a day to be a musician every
sure.
day. Or I will never sleep.
So are there any things that you can do to trigger your creativity at will for the music?
It just happens. And I will feel it sometimes. Like, I will know. In fact, like with the Calling of the Crows, I knew for a long, long time what I wanted the record to be about for me, symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
I try to find things in records that are there for me, but that you don't necessarily have to know to. I don't want people to have to do a lot of work to listen to it. I don't want it to be difficult.
Sure.
So I try to keep it as universal as possible, but I know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all these ideas and themes in my head. I knew I wanted it to be about crows,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I wanted it to be about Erik Satie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was very inspired by his music in that time. And and Bertolt Brecht, the playwriter and musical writer. There were just ideas in my head of main themes and concepts I wanted to use, and I just was waiting around, and then...
Mm-hmm. Why the concept of the crows?
I had seen... I had never really thought about crows or birds really one way or the other. I'm a huge animal lover, but for some mm-hmm. reason, birds had just never been my thing, I guess. I hadn't really paid much attention. And then I saw the PBS Nature episode, their series Nature.
Okay.
They did a whole episode on crows, and I was just astounded by how intelligent they are.
Okay.
And that they have family units mm-hmm. and like extended family, like
oh,
aunts
really?
And uncles and the whole kind of thing, and they stick together through their lives, and they have funerals.
Huh, who knew?
When a crow dies, they have a funeral for it.
Hmm.
And it's so they're just very, very smart. They can do like three-step processes, which before this only chimps and elephants had ever been seen to do that
okay.
by scientists. So it's really interesting that a bird with a tiny little brain is so intelligent, because they're more intelligent than parrots.
All right.
So I found them so interesting. And then, of course, there's the symbolism through time of crows being like harbingers of death and darkness.
Right.
And I was a goth in high school, and I've always had an affinity for things like Edgar Allan Poe and,
okay.
and you know, stuff like that. So I like anything with a dark twist to it aesthetically. So I enjoyed that aspect of it as well. But I noticed that once I became interested in crows, that you notice them everywhere.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Because they're all over the place.
Sure.
And they're constantly cawing and making sounds. And so now I listen to them and I watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, in some ways, almost maddening sometimes, because I hear them all over the place.
Okay.